we understand that that's real, that's important. That's something that I want to remember when I get older. But a conversation with ChatGPT is not something that I want to remember. Probably when you are suffering in the deathbed and you are dying, you are not going to say, oh, what a wonderful conversation that I have with ChatGPT this day. But probably I will remember the crops that I grew up with my own hands. I probably remember the time that I spent with my family around the river or taking our foods or starting something. There are something that are real and there are some things that are not.
Welcome to Politics, a show where two software developers break the fourth wall and talk about the interlacing of technology and politics. I'm Josh.
And I'm Ray. We see technologies like crypto, AI, and surveillance infecting our politics. Meanwhile, governments and the media are making out that all this is inevitable. We can't leave the future in the hands of scheming technology leaders and their pet politicians.
We're here to raise our voice and open up the space for honest, good faith discussions. To help us organize and sharpen our ideas, we've invited some interesting and highly respected thinkers to share their understanding and their research with us and, of course, with you.
Politics is where we smash the myths and get to the truth.
Ray, we need to talk about data centers.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if we could find someone who knew something about data centers and could have them on as a guest?
Luckily enough, Ray, we did find such a person, and I bet you knew that and you were just having some fun. So we are joined today by Aurora Gomez Delgado. Aurora, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And I'm just wondering if you could introduce yourself and your organization.
Hi, my name is Aurora from Tu Nubes Seca Mi Rio. And we are an organization, our collective, that are working against data centers because they consume so much water, energy, and they create so much pollution for the people who are near. That is a huge problem from the environmental and social point of view.
By the way, the name is wonderful. When I first saw it, I just saw it as a word. I kind of didn't break it apart in my head. But then when I realized that, no, it's Tu Nube Seca Mi Rio. Okay, that's a perfect name. Your cloud is drying my river. I love that. How long has the organization been around? And how did the organization get formed? And how did you get involved?
Only 2 years and a half. So there is not too much time that we have been working around this. Before of this, when we hear about data centers, this kind of word sounds so boring.
Yes, you know, yes.
What the hell is a data center? Of course, we know it because we work around it, but we didn't think that it's such a problem. But we also belong to a podcast that the name is Pod Apocalypsis Now in a local radio in Spain. And we interview Sebastián Leude, who is an academic working with data centers in Chile, because Ana Valdivia interviewed him, and we discovered that, wow, this is one of these days that you say, okay, this topic is so interesting because it's these little people fighting against these giants of the big tech. So it's such an incredible fight. And I thought that when I was hearing this conversation that, wow, if this happened to me, I will feel so vulnerable. What can you do if Amazon, Google, or Meta come to your town and say, okay, I'm going to steal all your water, all your energy, and you can say nothing? This is the first time that I thought that maybe data centers are a huge problem. And in a few months, we realized that Meta is coming to our land. And I remember these people from Chile, and I think, well, we have to do what the people from Chile has done, because they are an inspiration for us.
And the Chileans you're mentioning, they were able to successfully stop a data center being built. Is that correct?
One of them, yes. The Cerrillos project was stopped, but they are not only, I think your fight is winning, not only when you stop a data center, it's also when you are able to create a law that can regulate this, and can rule over all these things. They do it also. They create a Chilean law, but they also help other countries, for example, Uruguay. So Uruguay can ask for more information in their project of Google. They are helping each other. They are creating a kind of network of mushroom moving everywhere. I think this is the way that we have to fight against these data centers, connecting each other.
So you're talking about like public disclosure about information, because I think a lot of the times these kind of planning activities, again, it's like you said, data centers are boring. Public sort of like meetings to get approval by the local authorities, it's all boring stuff, you know?
Yes.
It's not as exciting as telling ChatGPT to write your proposal for you.
It's just that exciting.
Well, I think that's the boring part. I mean, they you know, they'll go on and, I don't know, play an instrument or something and make good use of their life, but they will use artificial intelligence to write their proposals or something like this. And just treat it like in a perfunctory way. They will just treat it as, oh, this is like a trivial thing. The people will, you know, we're making a big investment in the local environment. And money is, you know, it's always a big amount of money that they're going to spend on data centers. And people are always excited about that. That's the headline that everyone gets. But then, you know, you get into this public disclosure thing about, well, how's it going to affect your society? And we see that, I mean, I mentioned ChatGPT because we see that with AI, and obviously we're talking about AI on this podcast, the requirements for data centers and for compute infrastructure, you know, they're going way beyond Chile, way beyond like the Southern Hemisphere. They're going to places in America, in Europe, obviously in Asia. It's going global. They need all of the opportunities, all of the possibilities that they can grab. Is that why the people were coming to your area, Aurora?
First, we want to make a consideration about data centers because there are two kinds of data centers. The old ones, the classical, now are retro, but the classical ones that they consume a lot of energy. They are not so big. They are quite normal and sometimes are for little enterprise, universities, and so on. Mm-hmm. But the other ones are for artificial intelligence, streaming, games online, and so on. So they need more capacity of process.
Right.
They need to process a lot of more.
So they're a different scale.
Yes, a different scale. So they need a different scale of water, a different scale of land, a different scale of energy.
Right.
So because they need so much energy that it's impossible to refrigerate their machines only with energy. So they need water. And also there's a big difference between the classic one and the new ones, because the new ones, hyperscale and colocation of a hyperscale, both of them are in only a few hands. You know, you look the American part, you look the Chinese part, and are always the same five companies moving around, you know, Google, Amazon, Meta, and in colocation are always Digital Realty, Vantage. There are not so much companies moving around. So it's also a problem of concentration of power. So when they come to your land, they give these big promises. Well, we are going to give you a lot of jobs. And people say, okay, it must be true. Because in the last century, when a factory comes to your town, it's going to destroy a lot of land, it's going to destroy your environmental, but they're going to give you a lot of jobs. But that's not true, because these factories, I have to say factories, they don't have a lot of jobs, only remote hands, people working in electricity, maybe in water, but not so much people working around. So maybe you have a huge data center of hyperscale, for example. Hyperion of Meta is so big, it's so large as the Manhattan Island. It's the same land, so it's incredible. But they don't give too much jobs. And it's something that we have discovered for a long, long time in all the places that all data centers have been built. But the problem is that the authorities, they say, okay, come here. We are going to give you environmental impact exception. So if you pollute, if you use too much water, don't worry. That's not for you. This is for the other factories. And we are going to give you a lot of tax exception. So you are a tax evader, we are going to give you subventions. So, wow, it's incredible because there are not other industry that we are giving them so much facilities and so much advantage right now that the ones we are giving to the data centers.
Also, you would think that like in Europe, they have like the common agricultural policy. They do give subsidies to farming and stuff like this. They give subsidies to all kinds of European industries. But like you said, these are not European industries.
No.
They're American industries or global industries. So I'm wondering why the Spanish authorities, European authorities are so happy to give all of these subsidies, all of these exceptions, all of these tax breaks.
They are moving in two levels. For example, local authorities in Spain, they are welcoming all these data centers, but at the same time in Europe, they are trying to regulate with the AI continent law. And they are saying, okay, let's make some law to regulate this because it's a question of sovereignty. But at the same time, sovereignty for them are trying to attract the American companies, but the American companies doesn't pay tax here
right.
for a long time. So that's a crazy thing here. So, of course, sovereignty of in the same time. Yes, I didn't say global because are American. Are American.
Yeah.
In the Chinese part, for example, in the south of Europe, we don't have these data centers from China. But in Brazil, for example, in Brazil, they have this TikTok company that's huge in the Ceará community. And Roberto, who is the leader, el cacique from them, just say, okay, that's not fair. They are coming here to Orlando, still in Orlando, so it's not fair. But for example, in Norway, they have also the Chinese part, so it's different. But I think the huge problem, of course, is the concentration of power. And we have to decentralize the power.
So they're bringing a whole bunch of like high-powered lawyers and high-powered lobbyists. They're bringing like cannons and artillery to a knife fight, basically.
There is an incredible statistic that I was looking for this part of the lobby of data centers. And in USA, 70% of the lobbyists, they have been politicians before. So...
Right. The revolving door.
They know the tricks.
The revolving door is incredible. And when I'm looking for this information in USA, okay, this is the numbers of the cipher of this. And then when you go to the European Commission, you have the same percentage of revolving doors. And this is a huge problem. In Spain, for example, the spokeswoman of the Spain DC, who is the lobby of data center, has been a politician, a local politician.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Very important one.
So she knows how to talk to local politicians, kind of using the language they understand and so on.
Mm-hmm. So it's a huge problem of power because I'm a little company. I come to your land and the local mayor say, I don't care. But if it's so, so big, it's difficult for them to say no. And sometimes we have these incredible stories about, for example, I have to talk about Villamayor del Gallego. Is in Spain, in Aragon, is one of the regions that we have more data centers. It's incredible. It's our planet, are not built yet. The one who has been built is the one of Amazon. So in Villamayor del Gallego, the local mayor are taking the breakfast, the coffee shop, and then he realized that, okay, there is a data center, the TV are saying that there is a data center coming to my land. And I even know about it.
Oh.
Has been imposed. Was incredible because, you know, who are taking the decision to say, okay, there is a data center to destroy your land? And of course, it's the regional level. So, when we are talking about politics, it's quite different to talk about regional, local, and national because they have different roles in all of this.
Right. So in this case, the regional government had given permission for a data center to be built, but the local mayor had no idea about it.
Yes.
How is that possible? How is that allowed?
Yes, this is because they use these local laws that allow them to have this advantage. So these local laws are a law that allows them to pay less tax. So it's a kind of evasion tax. And they also, they can go fast. They can make the project so, so fast that right. the people who are against the project, it's impossible for us to make any kind of opposition. It's impossible for us, for the civil society to say no or what's going on and so on. So they know that they have to go directly to the regional level, not to the national level, not to the local level.
Uh-huh.
That's what's happening in Castilla-La Mancha, in Aragon, who are the regions that I know more about this problem.
Makes sense. So the so-called cloud has been around for a long time.
Yes.
I think AWS launched about, what, 2007, thereabouts, 2006, so almost 20 years now.
Mm.
But I guess in just the last 3 or 4 years since we've seen these large language models and hyperscaled AI come onto the scene, as Ray mentioned, like this technology requires a huge amount of compute infrastructure. And I'm just wondering, have you seen that on the ground, a big change in the amount of data center capacity they're trying to get built?
I see the difference in my own experience, because when I was, you know, a teenager or a young person, I go to the university and there are little servers or data centers are in the university. When I grew up, I go to my companies where I work on, and okay, we have these server rooms, always so messy with a lot of cables. Okay, this is our machines, and we have the property, so the IT crowd always call, you have to take care of your files, you have to clean your files, you have to, you know, you have to be responsible of this. But then when I tried to study again, so I came back to the university to keep my education, they say, okay, there is no server rooms anymore.
Right.
You have to put your files as a student at the cloud of Microsoft. And I say, what? I don't want to put my files in the Microsoft cloud. I just want to use my free software with my Linux computer, and I can send you without problems by email. And they say, no, you have to put it in the platform. And I ask about the IT crowd, and the IT crowd was fired.
Uh-huh.
There is not sysadmin working anymore at the university. There are not so much. There are some of them, but not too much.
Right.
And I realized that, okay, this is a huge problem, because all these big companies with their clouds, they are eating all the resources, but also they are destroying the works. So now the sysadmin are working for one company, and they are moving between 200 of clouds at the same time, at the same day. So there are less people working in the same area. So yes, there is a huge difference when the clouds come to our territories, but when the artificial intelligence come, for example, we don't have too much hyperscale here in Spain.
Right.
But in the last 5 years, we have so many projects who have been approved to have hyperscale in Spain that we are really scared about it, because we know what's going on in Chile, what's going on in USA, in Virginia. There is a Spanish, I don't know how to say, refrain.
So it's an idiom.
Okay, it's like, cuando las barbas de tu vecino veas cortar, pon las tuyas a remojar. It's an idiom. Okay, the idiom says, when someone is suffering some harm, you have to see, okay, I have to prepare myself because I'm probably going to suffer the same harm.
So you mentioned that there have been a lot of hyperscale data center projects approved in the last few years. When you say a lot, are you talking about like 5, 10? How many roughly do you know?
Aragon, who is one of the regions that we have been researching more, because we are working with Intermon Oxfam, that they commissioned a research about the data center of Aragon. We have more than 30 data centers.
30, just in that region?
In only one region.
Wow.
Now, Madrid has 3 times more petition of connection of energy than Virginia, who is one of the counties with more data centers in all over the world. So we are really tiny in comparison with you. So imagine what's the problem, what's going on.
Yeah, so this is like, obviously, as these bits of infrastructure get built and get approved, it's going to have a real effect on people's lives and the environment and all this kind of stuff. But maybe we can talk about like more short-term impacts, more kind of like how people, because I think people think about the environment and they think about it in an abstract way. They feel like the damage is diffused. It's kind of somewhere else. It's not affecting me, you know? And until people really feel like it's affecting them, a lot of people won't take action or they won't feel like it's something they need to care about. But it seems like these days, with the amount of water and electricity that these data centers are consuming, that it will actually have an impact on the local population. Is that something that you're aware of that's coming now or is going to be coming soon to a electricity bill near you?
For example, the first part that we are really concerned is about water, because we know that there are a lot of places in USA that they don't have water to drink. That's
right.
Incredible. This is the main part that maybe start our process to think that maybe data centers are not so boring. And then we realize that that's the same problem going on in Querétaro, Mexico, where Ana Valdivia, the famous academic about data centers, make a research, and these people in Querétaro, they have no water to their crops, so to grow up their vegetables, so they cannot eat their vegetables. So it's more expensive to them to eat, but also they have no water to drink. That's incredible, but that's going on in every country that you see that there is a huge concentration of water centers. And also you have the problem with the the sewage.
The sewage, yeah.
Fox Globe, that is an organization in UK, is opposing a data center in Lincolnshire.
Lincolnshire, yeah.
And the authorities of water, they say that it is a huge problem because if there is overflow of seed, because the sewage is going to enter in the water that the people have to drink. So it's a huge infrastructure problem because data center are using too much water. It's incredible for me. Wow, this huge problem. And they also, the problem is for the agricultures, because if they take out their land, they take out the energy. For example, in Netherlands, there is this huge problem with AgriPort, that is kind of, it's the same thing like smart cities, but smart crops that, oh, we are so efficient and so beautiful with technology, but that's not true. And they are using too much water for their crops, and they are using too much water for the data centers. So in Netherlands, the people who are opposing are the agricultures.
The farmers, yeah.
The farmers. So it's quite interesting. And also there is all the problem with the bills. For example, the electricity bills, but also the water grid. When you go to a data center who has been planned, the first thing that you see is the company, the towers of energy, the infrastructure of water. And who paid that? The government. So right. Who paid that? The normal people, not the companies. So if you go right now, we have been in Meta and Talavera. We have seen the electrical station there who has been just built for Meta, but everybody has paid it, so it's not fair. And there is a problem with the bills in three ways. First, that normal people have to pay these grids. You know, they have to pay this infrastructure for the data centers.
Right, to build it.
Yes. The second one is electricity bills that are so huge that people in Ohio and in Virginia, you are seeing your bills going up in such a way that is incredible, because there are people from Baltimore writing to me, showing me their bills, and I say, wow, it's impossible to pay them.
And it's a shocker to me that A, we have to build the electricity capability, and then B, that even once we've built that, our kind of electricity bills go up. This makes no sense.
And there is one point more that also make me feel so enraged, that there is a Bloomberg series of research about these electricity bills and so on. And they also discovered that the electricity grid was so unstable that they destroyed, how do you say, electrodomesticos?
Appliances.
Appliances.
Household appliances, yeah.
My fridge. Yeah. My washing machine.
Because you get spikes in the... in surges, I think they're called. Yeah.
And for example, my fridge, he's 20 years old, so has a name. His name is Federico, of course. And now they are going to be destroyed in 2 years, 5 years. So I can't even put a name to my fridge. So it's quite sad, and it's
that
quite
sad.
Difficult for the people, because paying a fridge is not so easy.
Yeah, of course. The other thing, I mean, I don't know if you're looking at this as well, is that what we found is that, let's say that there's been a kind of general awareness that something like solar energy, wind energy would be better than fossil fuel energy for the climate crisis that we're living in. And so a lot of governments, a lot of Europe has been investing in solar power, in wind power, and to try and reduce the amount of fossil fuel that's used. But what we're seeing, and I don't know if you're seeing this also on the ground, is that a lot of that extra capacity that should really mean that the amount of fossil fuels that are being burnt should go down and be replaced by the sustainable energy from the sun and from wind and from, you know, rivers and stuff. Yeah. All of those sustainable ways of getting energy now just seem to be added, and the fossil fuels, instead of going down, they're either staying the same or actually increasing. This is not what we wanted.
No.
So I don't know if that's something that resonates with you as well, Aurora.
There is a wonderful report that I really recommend, is System Overload by Beyond Fossil Fuels by Jim McArdle and Pierre Terras. And it's a report about how these data centers are using fossil fuels. And they do it from Ireland, from the Ireland point of view. But when you come here to Spain, we have a lot of renewables. For example, we are 17 regions. In only one region, Aragon, we have 30 data centers that is going to be built. In Aragon is one of the regions that we have more wind power. So, okay, theoretically, it's going to be good. A good idea to have a lot of wind power. But the problem is also we are destroying the territories with also these huge macro projects, are not tiny ones.
Right.
And when you see what's going on with renewables, you see, okay, you have this region, they produce a lot of energy. So the first idea is with this all this wind power, we're going to help the transition, the ecological transition and so on. We are going to give this energy to the other regions, and also we are going to give this energy to France and Portugal. Okay, that's perfect.
Yeah.
But when data centers come, only one project, Amazon, they spend the half of the demand of the whole region.
Oh, wow.
So it's impossible to give all this energy for data centers at the same time going to the ecological transition. And these are not only my words. For example, United Nations, they have made a wonderful report in July, and they research about energy and water, and they realize that data centers are a huge problem for the planet and for the ecological transition. So United Nations say data centers are a huge problem. We have to make a moratorium.
Wow. So just stop building.
Yes, we have to stop. It's impossible to go in green and also at the same time having data centers. And I feel so unfair, because there is a lot of people who are suffering and they are trying to change all their little business to be more green, because they care about climate change. Or maybe they don't care, but they have their rules that they have to follow. But these data centers didn't obey any kind of rule, because no one has ruled them.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we saw, I think 5 years ago, Amazon and Google for sure, I think Microsoft also announced these sustainability targets, and they were going to be carbon neutral by, you know, whatever, probably 10 years from now. It's always some convenient date in the future.
No, I think 2030, I think.
Is that, yeah, so 2030. So they announced this probably around 2020, and they said in 10 years, we're going to be carbon neutral. And just in the last year or two, you know, some of them just kind of quietly removed those commitments. But I think Microsoft CEO even said it out loud, right? Like, because of the investment into AI, we're not going to be able to meet our sustainability targets. So like you said, it's just any gains that we should have been seeing from renewables are just going straight into the energy grid needed by these huge data centers and so on. So we're not going to be able to do it.
I think one of the things to me, and we can talk about, again, like using water and using electricity. And I think when people think about growing vegetables or growing animals, those things are to feed people. Those things are useful. You know, there's a purpose to it. And you could argue about whether like feeding animals is, again, sustainable. A lot of people will argue that actually it's better not to grow animals and we can live off vegetables. But not everyone is of that opinion. You know, I speak as a vegan, so I am of that opinion. But, you know, even if you say, okay, there's a debate there about animal agriculture, it does pollute a lot, it consumes a lot of water, and it emits a lot of environmental pollution. But there is like an output, there is meat on the table, there is, people get some value out of it. I understand that, it's something real. But the AI discussion, it feels like data centers are being built without a meaningful purpose. I guess that's my point. How does that play out for you, Aurora, in terms of like arguing about whether these data centers should be built or not?
Yesterday I was in Talavera de la Reina. The first agriculture that talked to me and said, okay, this is a huge problem, is Luis. And I have been with Luis recording with the national television, El Escarabajo Verde, who is a mythical TV program about ecological. And I say to them, you have to look for it because you understand why we are fighting for. And when you see the crops of Luis, they say, okay, let's meet in the broccolis. And only for the opportunity to talk in the middle of the broccolis, I think it's a good idea. With the driver. And with their little donkey, Rusko. So when we go there, we understand that that's real, that's important. That's something that I want to remember when I get older. But a conversation with ChatGPT is not something that I want to remember. Probably when you are suffering in the deathbed and you are dying, you are not going to say, oh, what a wonderful conversation that I have with ChatGPT this day.
Unlikely, yeah.
But probably I will remember the crops that I grew up with my own hands. I probably remember the time that I spent with my family around the river or taking our foods or selling something. There are some things that are real and there are some things that are not. And we have to take care of the things that that matter. For example, I really love Miyazaki films. I'm a huge fan of Hayao Miyazaki. And do you know when this, there is these people for artificial intelligence and they show them, okay, that's what can we do with artificial intelligence? And he makes this famous meme of, this is an insult for the life itself.
Yes.
I think data centers can be useful, but not that way. Must be tiner, must be another way that we can have the power of the data centers, not in five hands of the big companies.
Right.
Maybe we can take care and thinking about, from the ecological point of view, we have to think about the growth, digital growth, because it is at the same way we are thinking about the growth in general. So we have to think about primary computing. When we think about the growth, we have to think about what we want to preserve and what we want to let it go.
Right. And I think the three of us probably agree that generative AI is a thing that we should let go. It's not worth the cost here. I want to maybe focus in on water a little bit, since I know that you said that that was kind of what brought you to this fight. So just to say for some of the people listening, why data centers need water, Well, you mentioned it before, Aurora, it's to cool the computers, basically, because these things, they're packed in very densely. They use a lot of electricity, and all of that electricity basically is then radiated from the computers as heat, and it has to go somewhere. So they use water cooling. And even worse than that, they have to use fresh water, drinking water. They can't use seawater because it corrodes the pipes and so on. So they're taking water directly out of our mouths, the water that should be going to, like you said, grow crops, obviously to drink. And I think you also mentioned the Aragon region in Spain is one of those with the biggest water shortages. Is that correct?
Yes. In Aragon, they have a huge problem with dry. Also in La Mancha. In La Mancha, that is my region, our name means dry region. Okay. The Arabs come here, say the region, and say, okay, this is a dry region. This is La Mancha. And this is okay. The main. So in Aragon, they also have a lot of problems with dry, even when they have this huge river that is El Ebro. El Ebro has a lot of water, but at the same time, there is a lot of region of Aragon. They are really dry. So in Spain, now we have, I mean, still really surprised to say that because that doesn't happen 3 years ago. We are not used to have these huge floods that are killing so many people at the same time. Mm-hmm. Aragon is one of the regions that's happening at the same time that we have having dry season.
Right.
So we have or dry season or flood season. So it's deadly in both ways. Mm-hmm. And it's quite difficult to see a data center coming to your land. You know that it's a dry region, so they are stalling your water. Maybe it's not too much water, but you have to put the water of the data centers, the hydrogen projects, and there are a lot of projects coming to the land that they are going to use a lot of water. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when a data center comes into your land, and it's one of the parts of the supply chain. I have to cite again Ana Valdivia. She make a wonderful research about the supply chain of the artificial intelligence and water. So she researched about water, for example, that must be used in mineral extractivists, for example, in Congo. That they are causing a war. You have to look for the water in the cheap construction in Asia. Mm. You have to look for the construction of, so the use of water in the factories in China. And you have to look for the, in the submarine cables and so on. So when a data center come to your land, they are using materials that have used a lot of water in all the supply chain. So the problem is more, I think it's local, and it's global because it's a kind of digital colonialism, like Mejías and Kudry says.
Yeah, it's an extractivist project, basically.
Yes.
One thing that people will say, it's good to answer this question, I think, is like, okay, you put water in, you water cool everything, it's fresh water, it's in a pipe, it's getting heated up, but surely at the end of the day, you can just like turn that pipe around and put it back into the river. And the river's big enough, it's not going to affect the heat of that river or the ecosystem. So what's the problem with like taking the water out of the river, putting it through the factory, the data center, cooling everything down, and then putting it back into the river a bit further downstream, and everyone can get on with their lives? Why doesn't that work out?
The first part is that we don't have too much tap water. When you see that only 1% of the water in the world are water than a human can drink, I think it's quite concerning.
Right.
Because we think, okay, we are a planet covered with water, but not all the water can be drink by a human. It's only the soup water under the earth has been there for a long, long time. We don't take the water from the rivers. We take the water from the underground.
Right.
They take this water, who is tap water, who has been cleaned, for example. And then they evaporate a lot of water. So maybe the problem is not here, but maybe the next place, the next territory is going to have no water because the river is not so huge and some of the water has been evaporated. At the same time, when they spill the water in the river, are in a different temperature. So right. if there is no enough restrictions and authorities looking for and taking care for the water and the temperature is higher, there is a problem with the old ecosystem surrounding. For example, we have this problem in Marseille that have these little shrimps that live near where the data centers are expelling the water and are in risk. And we also have these beautiful clams in Aragon. It's a clam that, okay, is wonderful for the ecosystem, you know, because it's one of the central points. But with the cells, the people from the region, they make their knives.
Ah, okay.
So it's also important for the people. These clams are part of their identity and their heritage. So they pollute the water. So it's also a problem. So the temperature, the pollution, the evaporation. There is another part that maybe we have,
13.5.
We have this number of electric hydropower in Spain, and it's also in the same river, like Meta wants to put the data center. What's happened? If you use too much energy, you need more hydropower electricity.
Right.
So they stop the river. So the river is not, they didn't flood anymore.
Right.
One century ago, was normal for people from Toledo to move with a little boat and going to Lisbon by the river. And now it's impossible because the hydropower press doesn't allow this. So they take the water, they stop it, and then they move and floods everything. So the life cannot live there in this river anymore. So it's a river only for industrial point of view. So
right.
It's also a problem for the electrical generation. And there is some people who are suffering this in Latin America also with hydropower electricity.
Yeah. So since you mentioned Latin America, I know when we talked previously, you told me that you were kind of connected to other organizations all over the world that are also fighting against data centers. So I'm just wondering, could you tell me about what's happening elsewhere in the world?
Every time that we make an interview, there is another community that write us. So I hope that someone call us after this podcast. But the first one are all people from Latin America are connected, all of them. And there is a lot of people in Chile that I have told before, but in Uruguay are quite interesting because they are making a kind legal fight against Google in the highest legal institution, because in Uruguay, the right of water is in their constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the water has rights. That doesn't happen in Spain. Nature has no rights.
No.
So it was incredible. And they are making this legal fight in Uruguay that allowed them to know how much water was consuming Google. And Non Nieto and Daniel Peña were one of the activists making this fight. And also there is now people who are moving around Argentina, because in Argentina, you know, Milei, Crypto Bros, OpenAI moving in Patagonia.
Yeah.
There is a lot of people in Mexico really coordinated because they have a lot of fight around water, usually women fighting for the water, because, you know, this is the most normal fight. There is a lot of countries in Latin America. In Europe, we have Marseille in France that are wonderful because they have this problem with gentrification.
Right.
And data centers, because Marseille have all the data centers in the same city. So they have this smart building that they call it Smart Seya that are from Microsoft, Google, and so on. So the people who are living there, renting their houses, are suffering from that your landlord is a big tech. So it's like a corridor through book. It's a total dystopian life. And they have this problem, what we are talking about, the energy transition, that they want to put electrical buses because they have this problem of pollution. And they want to put public transportation, but they need electricity and they don't have enough grid for it, because data centers are eating all the grid. So the mayors have to beg for, okay, digital reality, give me some patios to put two buses for the people. So there is no possibility to have electricity cars, no taxis, no buses, because all the grid goes to the data centers. In Germany, there is a lot of data centers also, but in Poland and Ireland, there is 30%.
Yeah, exactly. 30% of their electricity is going to data centers.
Yes. And in UK, there is a huge data center moving around. And for example, it's a huge problem for housing. Because in London, there is this huge problem with the housing. And they want to build more houses. And it's not possible because data centers has eaten all the grid. So there is a new neighborhood that is going to not gonna be built in London. And the same happened in Netherlands. There is a university that has been built yet and has no connection to the power, so it has not energy to work on. So we have the same problems everywhere. In Europe, we have the European Union, so we have the same laws. So we find that it's quite useful for us. Okay, we are not to fight each local data center, we are going to fight together. So we are working in a lot of different collectives, for example, making research together. We are helping each other with the legal part, and we are trying to change some laws in the European Union. There is a kind of pattern that there is local people who say no against a data center, and has some journalists who research around the data centers. So this is the first connection. There is the local journalist, brave local journalist, and the opposition against the data center. And then they find the people who can help them in the legal part, for example, ecological association and so on, that used to have wonderful layers. So they are stopping these data centers. And for example, sorry, again, I have to say a number.
142.
Collective in USA that are stopping or slowing data centers in USA. And this is always they are doing the same. Okay, let's stop it. So at the same time that these local people are stopping the data centers, other people, for example, used to be more NGO collectives and so on, they tried a moratorium in all the country. So a moratorium is when you say, okay, I have to stop and think, what kind of data center infrastructure and internet we want and we deserve. So this is a good idea because in this time you have time enough to think another regulation. For example, that what's going on, for example, in European FNCC law and EU continent is laws that maybe can rule around data centers. And in Spain, we are with a national law. And when we discover that is okay, we make all this campaign in the media, the government say, okay, this is important for the people, so let's make some kind of law. We bring all the people together, the journalists, the academics, the opposition everywhere, and let's write them together a document so they have some information to fight against data centers, because, you know, lobbies, they have a lot of power. And they sent a lot of allegations to these laws because they have huge project to do it. But people, we have no money, any kind of money, so we had to do it by ourselves.
So maybe if you have to do it by yourself, I mean, maybe the question is like, how do we grow organizations like this? Because, you know, obviously it would be really good if the government was funding it, or if like billionaire philanthropists were funding it. Yeah, I mean, it's sadly comical, unfortunately. So yeah, what can people, what can listeners and other people in the community, what can we do to help support these organizations?
First of all, they know that when you want to do something, maybe they feel vulnerable because, you know, the power is so big, they feel lonely and small. So they have to think, okay, my power is not when I'm alone. I cannot say, oh, how can I clean my emails and so on. No, I have to go to my, for example, college, and I say, okay, my university, I don't want to work anymore with my cloud of Microsoft, Google, and so on. So let's change it. For example, you can go for the school of your sons and daughter and say, okay, let's change this. I don't want to have any kind of artificial intelligence in the classrooms. Right. So let's have this talk together. So in collective, we have the power to change the things. Maybe we are not too much, but you know, this is something that we know in social movements. We need not to be so much people. We need to be really only few people, but really passionate and coordinated.
Very true. Very true. Well, we have been going for a while now. So I'm just wondering, you know, by way of wrapping up this conversation, are there any things that you really want people to make sure and take away from this? If there are one or two things that you want people to remember, what would they be?
Okay, that data centers are not so boring. we have to look for it because they have this narrative around the cloud. The cloud is invisible. The cloud doesn't matter. The cloud is ethereal. But the reality is the cloud consumes a lot of water, a lot of energy, a lot of land. And it's impossible for us to make ecological transition, as Ray says, if we didn't make this change everywhere. So this is, for me, the most important part. And the second part, this is a question of digital colonialism. So every time that we are using artificial intelligence, we are doing with a privilege. We are white people in the North using artificial intelligence for nonsense. At the same time, there is someone in Congo suffering the consequences.
Right.
And also some rural people in our land suffering the consequences, because even in richer countries, we have these rural people who are the poorest between us. So we don't want to create more sacrifice zones everywhere.
Right.
We want to have social justice, and social justice cannot be in this techno-capitalist world.
Yeah, there are people in other parts of the world, and people should care. I agree. They should care about the environment. But what do you think about, like, when are people really going to care, do you think?
I don't know. For example, I have some kind of hope with this problem with Windows, that they, you know, maybe people can realize that it's not normal, that if they put you artificial intelligence, you'd have to throw up your computer because it's impossible to run this ecosystem of Microsoft, no? So there are some people who realize maybe I did Windows and I put Linux, my computer is working without problems. I have been working in this world of technology, so I really use technology every day. I'm a huge consumer of technology, but my technology is Linux, it's free software. I have the sovereignty of my data. I didn't pay more. And when I don't have a software, I pay for them, you know, I pay for a computer, a developer that can make it for me. Mm. And it's wonderful. This is impossible in a world of private software. I used to work in social media like Mastodon, Fediverse, that, it's a decentralized network that is not from, you know, rights people like Musk and so on. So it's different. So there is a lot of people living in the other internet. When people think, okay, this is the future and this is impossible to think in another kind of future, I remember Thatcher saying, okay, there is no future. This is the capitalism is the only way. It's the same. We used to have another internet, like Cory Doctorow says.
Right, yeah. I was just thinking Cory Doctorow when you said that. Yeah.
We used to have another internet. And there are possibilities to think together and find the hope and the collective resistance to create another one, a solarpunk internet with our own infrastructure, little infrastructure, not more green and more sovereignty.
Yeah, that's a real ray of hope, you know, that if we think about technology very intentionally and what do we want technology to do for us? You know, how can we use technology to improve the life of everyone? And then we look at the actual limits and we think about, okay, how can we build technical solutions for these ends? And how can we build only what we need and not just, you know, growth for the sake of growth?
Hmm.
So I really like that. So I think we should wrap up here. And I think since we're ending on a positive note, that's always a good thing. Yes. So thank you so much again, Aurora, for agreeing to come on and talk to us. I learned a lot from this conversation. I'm sure the listeners did too. So thank you so much.
Thank you to you. I love to have the conversation, and maybe when my English is not so bad, but... And my numbers are impossible.
We're happy to help with the numbers. That's been really good. No, thank you very much, Aurora. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is that bit at the end where we thank you for listening to this episode of Polytechs. First, we hope you enjoyed the show, and we really appreciate the time you've given to this subject. If you want to follow up with us, please send email to podcast@polytechs.dev, because that's very direct and doesn't have any algorithms. If you prefer social media, we're at Polytechs on Blue Sky and at Polytechs at mastodon.social. We're not on Twitter for obvious reasons. To help the show reach a wider audience, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. There's nothing as good as a real human recommendation. You can find out more about the show on the website, which is polytechs.dev. As you should expect, there are no cookies or tracking of any kind. All the show notes, transcripts, and contact details are over there. If you want to show a deeper level of commitment, there's also an option to donate. We're passionate about free and open access to the episodes, so there's no obligation and there are no benefits other than a warm feeling in your heart. Finally, we would really appreciate a 5-star review on your podcast platform. Reading positive reviews makes us feel good and can help others find the show and make them feel like it's worth their time. Okay, that's all the admin done, and we hope to see you next week. Bye!